90.3.
The rhymes you're about to hear me recite are dedicated to all of those that bite.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Off the Hour, right here on CQT 90.3 FM. We are 12 days into the month of August. We are broadcasting from unceded Mohawk Anishinaabe territory. You are tuned into The Avalanche, a special presentation of CQUT's Community News Department. The Avalanche seeks to cover issues affecting those with disabilities. I'm your host, Zoe. On today's show, an episode of It's Going Down, titled Finding the Intersections Between Anti-Capitalism and the Fight Against Ableism. All that on CKT 90.3 FM. You're listening to The Avalanche, where all abilities are welcome. If you would like to get involved, you can call 514-448-4041, extension 6788, or email news at cqt.ca. You can also follow us on Twitter at @avalancheCKUT. Again, that's @avalancheCKUT. Welcome back to The Avalanche on CQT 90.3 FM. For today's show, an episode of It's Going Down, titled Finding the Intersections Between Anti-Capitalism and the Fight Against Ableism. This episode features disability rights activist Adam A. Naughton, creator of the website Not Your Inspiration. That's up now.
And you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running. There is no hiding. There's only fighting. Or dying, it's going down, and you're invited for what they sell it. We ain't buying, there is no running, there is no hiding, there's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast.
My name is Adam F. Naughton. I am a disabled activist in so-called South Carolina, in the so-called United States. And I am attempting to combat a problem in the disabled community called inspiration porn. But I'm looking to do so in a way that actually challenges a lot of the pre-established concepts about disability, and does so in a way that gets us to look at how we are more disabled by society than we are by any individual impairment.
You reached out to us about wanting to come on the show, which is great. I really encourage people, if you have a project like Adam does, we're going to be talking about the website that you started and kind of the overall theoretical project, which is awesome. You know, if you have something like this or something completely different, if something's going on where you live, if there's, you know, a struggle happening, or you're organizing project, or, you know, you're working on some sort of theoretical thing and you want to talk about it, please email us and come on the show. But yeah, before we kind of like dig into the nitty gritty of the site, for those of us that are new to this, can you map out kind of like, I don't even know necessarily the terms to describe it, but disability justice is a term that we've heard a lot about. Like, what are the spaces and the disability rights movement, I guess would be another one that we would hear a lot about. Yeah. Like, what are the spaces and what are the different movements look like as you see it, just to kind of get us started, to just give us some parameters about what we'll be talking about?
Yeah. Well, so I would say that right now there's really kind of two communities. There's one community, and it's probably I don't actually have any numbers to show this, but if I had to guess, I would say it's probably about 98% of the disability community that is very medically model based and very focused on building but fixing or tinkering with little small systemic changes or little small things here and there rather than actual systemic changes. And then there's the other very small percentage, those of us who are really fed up with the systems and ready to build outside of it around what's called the social model of disability. So I guess let me start there maybe. There is a forever – We have all, anyone in a Western country, especially a capitalist country, we were kind of raised to view disability through a medical lens, not to be all ivory tower and talk about lenses, but, you know, that's kind of how a lot of us look at disability, as a medical issue. And that's referred to in the disability community as the medical model. It's what the majority of charity is based around. It's what the majority of government assistance is based around, in the United States at least, but predominantly in most capitalist countries. Essentially, it's entirely a view that disability is a problem within a person that needs to be fixed. It's something that, if society owes anything to a person, it's the attempt to fix them so they can be normal. They can be quote unquote productive members of society, find some way for the capitalist system to be able to put them to work. That's about the extent of the view of the medical model, other than it's just, you know, disability is something we got to fix inside of people. The social model of disability, it's a lot more recent. It's a direct response to the medical model, and it basically posits the idea that actually disability isn't a problem within me as a person. Disability is something that society has done to me as a person. And essentially what we do with the social model is we break disability away from impairment. So, for example, my situation, I'm a wheelchair user. I have a neuromuscular disease called spinal muscular atrophy. It's a genetic disease that I was born with. It's a progressive. So I, you know, used a manual wheelchair for a while in my life. Now I'm using a power wheelchair. That is my impairment. Under the social model, that impairment is a totally different thing from disability. Where disability is something, disability is society failing to account for that impairment in a way that I can be included in society. Now, this is my interpretation of the social model. If you got into theoretical discussions with professors, they would probably correct certain things about that. But this is kind of the way I interpret it and the way that I apply it in this project that I'm working on. So I guess kind of the broader objective is to really start pushing people away from the medical model and toward the social model and toward an understanding that disability is a thing that society does to me as a person with an impairment. A good example, for me especially, I like to say is if you build a set of stairs, my wheelchair is an impairment and a disability. But if you build a ramp, my wheelchair is just an impairment. It's no longer a disability. Society has no longer disabled me from participating. And that's just my example specific to me with my disability. You can apply this to any disability where some kind of minor or even large accommodation is necessary. And the problem that we face, as disabled people in the capitalist, living in a capitalist society, is that there is no financial incentive whatsoever, to push people towards the social model, right? There's no financial incentive generally in building a ramp unless, you know, we as disabled people can prove that we will not provide more value than it costs for the capitalist building owner to put the ramp in there. So, The kind of big picture mission for me is to really push people toward that social model. And the idea of inspiration porn as kind of a gateway into that is something that struck me toward the beginning of my quarantining. I went into quarantine fairly early in March because obviously I do not want to mess around with COVID whatsoever as a disabled person who already has, you know, neuromuscular issues of which your lungs are included. So I've been trying to hide away from the world, and this project has really kind of helped me with my sanity a bit. But it was something that just stemmed from me being bombarded on Twitter with these fucking advertisements from Hyundai of all companies promoting a clip from the Ellen show in which this woman from the audience, clearly a working class woman, brought up on stage, and they roll this clip of her daughter, who I believe had cerebral palsy, learning or showing that she's able to walk after, not being able to before. And Ellen's there and for some fucking reason, Usher's on the stage and they're just kind of all sitting around watching the clip and just going, oh my gosh, this isn't that so inspiring and isn't that so incredible? And I can see where on the surface that may be very appealing, but if you actually stop to think about it, if you think about the people like me who identify as disabled, who are never going to have a chance to walk, what is the message that you're sending to us? What are we internalizing? And I would say that the majority of media surrounding disability, is focused in this kind of way as it's, you know, again, it's something we got to fight, something we got to beat and overcome. And again, you know, that is an okay thing, but when that's the only message that we as disabled people get, it is very, excluding to us. And it's a tough thing to grow up with. It was a very difficult thing for me to grow up with as a kid. And in fact, it pushed me toward the right wing of the political spectrum for a very long time because I viewed my only chance to get ahead in this highly competitive system that we're in. My only chance to get ahead was to be better than anybody that I could be, because I realized very quickly that with a disability, I'm at a significant number of disadvantages. I mean, right off the bat, I'm excluded from a vast majority of the employment market. Like I can't go sign up, you know, to join the Marine Corps, and get an education and pay that way. That they don't want me. They have no interest in me. So I'm completely excluded from that field. And that's just one of many that I could pick that are close to me. So I realized early, that in this system, it's all about who, you know, being able to be ahead of somebody else, right? Or you're going to be the one that gets left behind. And so I unfortunately spent way too much of my life living that way, before it finally you know, through the work of a lot of great leftists, I finally was able to realize that that is the wrong way to do it, and that I will always be the low man on the totem pole unless I fight for all the other low people on the totem pole, everybody else in this situation. And so that kind of drove this idea for me to say, hey, let me take these obnoxious advertisements that I'm being bombarded with on Twitter, promoted by Hyundai with this clip, just basically them trying to say, hey, look, we're good guys, buy cars from us. And to me, that is a vile and really reprehensible thing. So I decided I'm going to just start a little website and a little Twitter campaign and tell them, you know what? I don't want to be your inspiration as a disabled person, right? Like, if you want to cheer for us, fine. If you want to help us, fine, but work with us. Don't do it in a way that really puts us down for your own benefit, that exploits us for your own benefit. So then, you know, that kind of building that site, really led me to begin looking at the space, the intersection of leftist socialist theory and disability theory. And I found that there's really not a lot there. There were some great folks who have worked there in the past. And one of my heroes is Marta Russell. I rely on her work a lot for what I'm doing with this project. She unfortunately died 7 years ago, I think now. And so her voice is no longer active. And that's, you know, something we could definitely use right now going through what we're going through with COVID and everything else. But I realized there is a void there. And so I'm really trying to begin exploring that void and seeing what role I might be able to fill, and hopefully in the long term use that to begin organizing the disability community and bringing us into alignment with other allies that we could work with, other leftist allies, other marginalized groups of folks, and maybe eventually start to really, you know, build some real progress within like a solidarity economy or something along those lines. So, you know, I have these like big lofty goals, but as of right now, it's all stemming from this real simple project to fight this one little simple thing that is inspiration porn, and then show people how this idea of inspiration porn is just another natural exploitation that evolves from this kind of rotten cooperative system or competitive system that we live under.
I feel like the kind of neoliberal narrative is that we live in a post-ADA world. Like, right. You know, we have ramps everywhere now. Like, you know, we've kind of like, quote unquote, fixed that. So I'm just curious, like, right. How would you respond to that? Like, what is this? You know, what is the reality?
The first thing that I would point to, and this is something that Marta Russell wrote at length about, is the Americans with Disabilities Act, which was passed in 1990. The first thing I would point to are the numbers of disabled people who participate in the employment system, right? So in Western countries like the United States and capitalist countries, your ability to survive, like your ability just to have some kind of income, you really kind of have one of three sources. You have the employment system, or you have some kind of, you know, government assistance, welfare, or charity. In the United States, for disabled people, charity is pretty much not an option, other than raising money to cure diseases. That's a lot of what charity is built around in the United States. And that's the medical model, which very well aligns with the kind of neoliberal model of a viewpoint of the world that, like, you know, hey, we've solved a lot of the problems. Everything's great. The ADA is maybe not perfect. You know, we'll just fix some things here and there. I would, you know, so charity, not really an option. You might, if you really have no income, you might be able to find a charity that might help you with some medical equipment here and there. Otherwise, you can kind of rule them out for any ability to get an income. So that leaves you with, you know, some kind of publicly funded entitlement program that's run by the government, or again, the employment system. So I would I would point to the employment numbers as a very clear indication of how the ADA has completely failed to really make any actual impact in the lives of disabled people. Because I just recently wrote about this. I went back to 2010 because that was the best data that I could get, 2008 or 2010, from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. And I just plotted out every single month how many people were participating in the workforce, disabled versus abled. And at any given time over that point, the numbers rarely fluctuated outside of around 20% participation for disabled people and around 70% participation for able-bodied people. And I didn't plot the numbers for the 20 years before that, but I went and kind of looked through the numbers historically for that period, and it's the same thing. It's very consistent, 20%, 70%. It's very rare to see a number that's outside of that. So at any given time, that means that 68 to 72% of the able-bodied population in the United States is actively participating in the employment system, meaning they actually they currently have an income that is generated by working. The number for disabled people at any given time, if we're lucky, I think the highest I ever saw was 22%. Most of the time, it's below 20%. I haven't seen the numbers for May yet because they're not out, obviously. I can't even imagine how bad that number is going to be. I'm sure it's going to be like 16, 15%. So what that means is that at any given time, only 1 in 5 disabled Americans, and these are non-institutionalized people, by the way. These are not people who have not been thrown into the commodified systems of institution that we have in the United States, where we commodify disabled bodies and incarcerated folks and other folks so someone can make a profit off us. So these are just people who aren't in that situation, people who are quote unquote free. 1 in 5 of us is able to meet our needs or not even necessarily meet our needs, but is actually actively participating in the employment system, meaning that only 1 in 5 disabled people can count on employment income as a means to meet their needs to survive. And that's not even saying that that's going to happen. That's just saying that at best, one in five disabled people might be able to count on that. So what happens to the other 4 in 5 disabled people, right? A lot of times we're just forgotten about. We're thrown into a government entitled program, and we can already rule out charity for the most part. Government entitled programs, similar to charity, are completely structured around the medical model view of disability and the neoliberal worldview. And a lot of times they are very insidiously used to keep us out of the workforce when unemployment is high and employers would prefer to have able-bodied people in the workforce. And vice versa, as we saw like in the 90s when unemployment numbers were low, government programs, welfare to work, et cetera, government programs are used to push us back into the employment system when employers are having trouble finding workers. So not only are government entitled programs a very inefficient and inappropriate tool to address the survival needs of the other 4 in 5 disabled people who can't take part or who aren't taking part in the employment system. It's not only that, but it's also it's used in a very gross and manipulative way to decide when and how we are allowed to participate in the workforce as disabled people. And again, the third option of charity, extremely limited and not very likely. So when you look at the world that way, and it hasn't changed a bit, none of those things have changed in the 30 years since the ADA was passed. I could have this conversation with you in 1990 and it would be just as true as it is today. So that would be my immediate response to why has the ADA failed, to really actually address, any needs that we as disabled people face. And I would also argue that it was deliberately designed that way. It wasn't actually meant to address our economic needs. It was only meant to address kind of the superficial needs, making sure that buildings have ramps et cetera. But it doesn't really address our economic needs. It doesn't make us economically equal to able-bodied people in this country by any means. And again, that was designed because the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and, you know, all of those big business groups were very active throughout the 80s when the push for the ADA was really on, especially in the late 80s. They were very, very active in undermining as much of the ADA as they could because their entire shtick was that this bill, this legislation would be terrible for employers. It's going to kill jobs. The same that they roll out anytime there's any, you know, effort to give workers more rights or give people more rights. It's the same talking points that it's job killing legislation or whatever the hell. We ended up with this kind of, the same kind of neoliberal watered down garbage that, yeah, sure, it makes some more buildings accessible to me, make sure that I have, access to parking when I need to, get somewhere. And I think those are all good things and I'm happy that I have them. But by no means has that moved the needle in any real measurable way, economically, especially. And that's the way that matters. I mean, until we as disabled people have some economic power, we're always stuck. I mean, we're always going to be stuck in the dead last spot. We're at the bottom of this pyramid. Some of us manage to work our way through the top and into the so-called middle class that Joe Biden and others think exists. But for the most part, we don't. For the most part, we can't.
Well, let's get into you. You brought up kind of this this difference between kind of like in a capitalist framework, but then you brought up this other concept of kind of like a social concept of what integrating things could be, and let's really talk about that. You when we started, we were saying the intersection between anti-capitalism and disability theory. So let's kind of get into that. What does that look like, or what would a, I guess, what an alternative kind of like lens look like?
Yeah. I'm a very, I guess, let me go back a little bit to the genesis of this project. And it was the part of why this timing fits so perfectly is because I was still processing the fallout of the end of the Bernie campaign. And in 2016, when that happened, I got very nihilistic and it almost kind of pushed me, underground and just say, I'm completely give up. And then, Bernie jumped in again. At 2018, we had AOC and some other folks, get elected. It gave me a little bit of hope. And then, 2020, Bernie jumped in again. It gave me a little bit of hope that things could be done within the system. This time around, I decided rather than get nihilistic, I want to find some ways to build outside the system. And so really, if I had a vision of the world that I maybe not necessarily would want to see, but the direction I would want us to go, that would be it, right? It would be moving into ways that we as disabled people can take power outside of the current systems, because it has become very clear to me, especially in the wake of Bernie's loss, but in seeing the lack of changes in the last 30 years since the ADA passed, or pick whatever benchmark you want, and we can show the marginal, very marginal progress that we've actually been able to make. I have come to the realization that I don't think that this, and this by this I mean actual equality for disabled people, and any really pick your marginalized group, I don't think it can happen within this competitive based framework that guides everything we do in the U.S., not just our economic system, but our entire political system. The whole idea of a republic based is a competition based thing. So for me, the future is the same future that a lot of other leftist groups are fighting for, and that's basically just a democratically run local system of power where we get to have a say over the decisions that impact our lives, rather than constantly playing musical chairs with people in power, which is the neoliberal solution. And, well, we just need more people in wheelchairs to be elected to positions. And sure, that does kind of help. But that, again, that is not really a solution in and of itself to the problem, right? You're still going to have this problem because the chairs are going to change again. So for me, you know, it's a, you know, inverted hierarchy where we've got a power derived from the bottom up type situation. Because in that scenario, I can't guarantee it's utopia or everything's going to be perfect, but I can be pretty certain that in that scenario where decisions are made democratically, I have an economically and politically equal voice as my neighbor. In that type of world, I don't get left behind. I mean, because I'm represented. I'm there. I don't have to worry about getting the right going out and busting my ass to get the right person elected and then hoping that they follow through on some vague promises that they made to do this or do that. So for me, I'm very much looking to, in the long term, looking for ways to start organizing the disability community outside of the current systems that are in place. And, you know, another reason for that is just that there are so many groups already doing that, right? It's very difficult to find any disability activist and advocate groups that are working kind of either in part of like the solidarity economy. I mean, there are some, but there are not many. I would argue that probably 95%+ of all disability focused groups, be they charities or just, you know, people getting together, a lot of them, almost all of them, are built around like awareness and less kind of tangible things than actually, you know, addressing economic issues and really starting to organize with fellow marginalized groups. There's just not a lot of that taking place right now. And I think not only is that probably the most successful route for us, I think it's the only route. And so it's the one that I'm really trying to take. So my goal is to kind of really begin within the disability community and around the issues that we face as disabled folks. But hopefully, at some point we can link up with other groups, in solidarity and other, you know, groups here and there. I'd love to have some kind of network of disabled leftists and disabled socialists that were kind of, you know, active and building in whatever community projects are available to them. You know, like I work and I build with the Democratic Socialists of America where I am in Columbia, so-called South Carolina. And, you know, I'm just by building with them and by bringing my disability perspective to the table with other leftists, it just guarantees, especially because I have a loud voice, but it guarantees that my perspective is represented. And I'm an equal voice in that because we build that way. We build as socialists. So, you know, there's a lot of things that we're doing that aren't just disability centric, but that will benefit the disabled community. So that's where I really would love to see the future, just this future around cooperation and around making sure that nobody's, you know, really left behind. I'm going to look it up because I always get it wrong, but the Frederick Douglass, quote about, you know, having a chain around your neck. No man can put a chain about the ankle of his fellow man without at last finding the other end fastened about his own neck. That's something that deeply powers all of this stuff that I'm doing. And I think powers leftism in general, is this idea that as long as one person is still in shackles, we're all in shackles. And I think that's a perspective that I really want to bring to the disabled community and really rally around that idea and not just see ourselves as marginalized because we're disabled, but marginalized because the system wants us that way, and to identify with all the other people that are in that same boat. And they may be marginalized in completely different ways and face completely different consequences of it, but we have a common thread that we are all marginalized, and it's generally done deliberately so.
Switch gears and talk about the website and
yeah.
This hashtag campaign that you've started, and you kind of brought up a little bit of it, but you know, remind us again, you know, what's the goal and
right.
And yeah.
Right. So I guess it was at the beginning of all this quarantine stuff, I was being bombarded, like I said, on Twitter by Hyundai with these ads with a clip. That's a very clear example of something called inspiration porn. And that is a term that was coined by the late, great, wonderful activist Stella Young. She was an Australian disability activist. She gave a wonderful TED Talk in 2014. It's only 9 minutes long, and I encourage everybody to take a look at it. And that TED Talk was a really good intro into the social model of disability for a lot of folks. But she talks about inspiration porn and the idea of inspiration porn as this thing that people see is helpful, but it's really not. And essentially what it is using the struggles of a disabled person to make yourself feel better. We see this in all sorts of different ways. You know, the slogans, the only disability is a bad attitude, shit like that. That is meant to really, erase the disability and talk about how the only thing that you should be doing as a disabled person is trying to overcome this physical impairment that you have. So this, this campaign that Hyundai was running on Twitter, and they ran a whole campaign. There were like a series of tweets, and I went and looked and I screen grabbed stuff. And but they were running this whole campaign with this clip from the Ellen show. And they bring this mother on stage and show a clip of her daughter and Ellen and Usher sitting. They all gush. The Ellen and Usher, again, Usher's up there for some reason. I don't know why. They all sit around and gush about like how amazing this is. And I'm sure it is. It's great for that girl, but for everybody else who has a disability, it is a horrible message that you are sending to us, that we're not good enough, that we need to be better, that we need to improve. It's something that I had to internalize as a kid constantly. And so, after being bombarded enough with this clip, I decided that I was going to juxtapose the clip with the 2014 TED Talk that Stella Young gave. So I kind of took some of the clips from her 2014 TED Talk and laid them against the clip from the Ellen Show that Hyundai USA was promoting on Twitter and talking. You know, they called the segment "Best News Ever" or something like that. It was entirely this idea of, hey, you know, sure, we're a big shitty multinational corporation that probably does horrible things to people that you don't even know about, but hey, look, we're doing this great thing. Look at this feel good thing. But again, it's not a feel good thing for those of us with disabilities. We look at that and those of us who know better cringe, but those of us who are younger and are still trying to find our way in a world where we have very few disabled role models to look up to, the message it sends us is that we need to hide our disability and try and be more quote unquote normal, whatever the hell that is per se. So, in her speech, Stella Young did a great job of explaining that concept of inspiration porn and, this, you know, really trying to get society in general to stop doing that kind of shit and stop constantly trying to, use us to make themselves feel better. Cause that's really what's at the root of this is you're looking at me and saying, oh shit, it could be so much worse. I could be that guy in the wheelchair. Right. And then I'm over here, the guy in the wheelchair going like, oh, thanks. Right. Like, how does that feel? And then you can easily extrapolate that and look around you and see how the system is designed the exact same way. And that's the connection I really want to make is that this viewpoint of this concept of inspiration porn only results, or definitely does result under a competitive system. It's not something that is nearly as likely to occur in a cooperative economic system where the goal isn't profit. The goal is making sure that every member of society has what they need to survive. In that system, there's no need for inspiration porn. It doesn't result from anything, right? Whereas in a competitive system, it is a direct result from the hierarchies that we establish and from having to have somebody that is lower than you on the totem pole in order for you to get what you need, right? You know, it's competition. The only way that I can get the resources I need is I have to exploit someone else to get them. And again, in that scenario, we as disabled people are at the bottom. We're at the very, very bottom. So I want to use this because it's a very tangible way, I think, this concept of inspiration porn and fighting it. I think it's a very tangible and approachable way for people who aren't necessarily leftists or even perhaps inclined to leftism, for me to show them how I continuously get, you know, really fucked over by these systems as just because I happen to be born with a genetic neuromuscular disease, right? Like that's it. There's no reason. And I am just one of many marginalized communities that is marginalized for a reason like that, that I just happen to get kind of a shitty draw on the genetic table as society defines it. And that's the important thing too, is one of the many things you get once you start to adopt a social model of disability is you realize Some of us actually don't mind our impairments. Like, we don't necessarily view them as a negative thing that needs to be changed. That's a crazy concept for able-bodied people. Like, what? But they're, you know, sure, I would love to be able to walk, and I would, you know, love it if my lifespan is not, you know, decreased or shortened by this genetic neuromuscular disease that I have. Those things may be true, but either way, I can't really change that fact, right? I'm still stuck with this body that I have. I don't get another one. So I need to do everything I can to be okay with that, be comfortable with it, because I already have enough other shit that I have to face as a person with an impairment, right? Like, just the day-to-day stuff of that presents enough problems. And then you get this kind of compounding thing on top of it when you're constantly telling me that I need to do better, or you know, need to be better, and that my disability is something I have to overcome. And if I can't overcome it, then the result is this kind of this pity and this, oh, I'm very sorry, and that's terrible. And I'm just tired of being told that I'm sorry for your disability and that kind of shit. Like, don't be sorry for me. If you actually care, the response is to find out what I need. And that gets to another big problem in the medical model, is that a lot of the charitable organizations that do exist tend to be run by people who don't actually have those disabilities. And it's that result of this medical model that we, as able-bodied people, we know what you as disabled people need, because we're whole, our bodies work, and we can show you what you need to function. And the result is that most of the charity doesn't actually address the day-to-day that we need. I just had to scrape together $2,500 for a down payment on my next wheelchair, because I have no financial assistance available to me as a person who currently does have an income. And I'm not complaining about my situation per se. I'm applying that to the average person, and I'm thinking, how the hell is your average person going to be able to do it? Again, I'm fortunate enough that I could scrape that together, not necessarily easily, but I did it just to get that ball rolling. But I'm definitely on the more fortunate end of the spectrum, you know, and I have decent health insurance, or what would be considered decent health insurance in this country. So I can't, you know, even imagine what going through that would be like for me if I didn't have those things. And there are millions of my fellow disabled peers in that exact situation. And to me, that's absolutely unjustifiable. There's no reason whatsoever that should be the case. And I don't see that changing unless we absolutely overhaul the entire systems and do so in a socially based way under the social model of disability.
You mentioned, you know, organizing. I'm curious in your perspective, and you mentioned, you know, bringing your perspective to other people. You know, let's talk about that. What do a lot of people miss, and like, what are you bringing up to them that they're missing, maybe, in terms of, you know, not thinking about or understanding ableism and disability?
It gets back to a lot of what you mentioned earlier, that a lot of people kind of think that the work is done. It's the same thing that really any other kind of justice movement faces, is this idea of, you know, that civil rights solved everything, right? No. And there's so many things that just civil rights movements alone can address, because they are economic things. And it's the same type of stuff that MLK, you know, started to kind of move towards to the end of his life, when he became, you know, more of a leftist, and realizing that this capitalist system is just never going to let us get where we need to get. So I think it's getting the able-bodied person to see that this disability is much more about society than it is about me. And that I, again, am not disabled as much by my impairment as I am by the way that society fails to actually account for it. And I think, you know, for me, I want to just keep having that conversation. That's why I have an active newsletter. I send a few times a week. I just send kind of a, you know, just an email message out to the list. And I'm really hoping to grow that newsletter, because I want that to be the vehicle that really drives this conversation, because I do want it to be a conversation. I don't want to think that I have all the answers, because I know that I don't. I want to find other people who have this kind of similar view. And I want them to be able-bodied allies too, right? I'm not just reaching out to folks who identify as disabled, as having a disability. I want us to also to build with our able-bodied allies, but I don't think that happens until able-bodied folks understand that disability and the injustices that we face are are largely systemic, and it's not me as an individual. So I think if I had to really push able-bodied people in a direction, it would just to be really see the social picture of disability and really understand kind of the nuance that there is in this realm for us, because it's a tricky thing that we have to navigate as disabled people. I'm sure it seems even trickier as able-bodied people. So I think making sure that people can appreciate that in a way that shows how systemically screwed over we get, and understanding that that's the work, not fundraisers and telethons and like that. I think that the more able-bodied allies I can find who will stop participating in a lot of the what I call telethon hell, and I really want to write more about this in my newsletter. I haven't had much of a chance to dip into it, but just the whole charity system is structured around telethons and fundraisers and shit like that, and so I'd love to see that whole cottage industry kind of pushed away a bit. That's not to say raising money to find cures is a bad thing, but it shouldn't be the only thing. So I'd love to see a space grow, and it's going to take able body awareness that we as disabled people need to be at the table making the decisions, not them as able body people, but also being allied and supportive with what we need when we say that we need it. I think that would, I mean, it's not really like one specific simple thing, but that's kind of that's the direction I really want to take my able-bodied allies out there. Really, really doing what you can to grasp the social disparities that we face.
Where do you see this project going in the future?
Yeah, well, you know, long term, like I said, I'd really love to get some kind of disabled socialist network. I'm a huge fan of the work and the model that the Black Socialists of America are implementing. So I think really what I would love to see is this fighting of inspiration porn and this Not Your Inspiration project serve as an entry point for folks to begin helping me build stuff in the long term and eventually form some sort of network or organization of folks that are aligned in this goal, and start building, and actually start getting ground under our feet, like the, you know, Black Socialists of America are advocating in a lot of the work that they're doing, going out and actually, getting disabled-run cooperatives and disabled-run business centers, disabled-run land trusts, whatever we can do to start actually building things as disabled people. If we can get to that point from this project, I'd be in heaven, man. I'd be in such a good place if that's the point we were at from this project. So, anyone listening, anyone out there who is a leftist, whether you're able-bodied or disabled, if you're an ally in this fight, I could use all the help I can just getting the word out that this is something that we're trying to do. That I don't want to be the only voice in this project. Right now I am. But I really do want, the reason I'm focusing on a newsletter is because I do want this to be a conversation. I want people to be able to converse back with me. And even if it doesn't end up, if the conversation moves to a different project that is a larger, more inclusive project, I think that would be great too. And this kind of just staying maybe my little project, but however it evolves and grows, I do want other people to be a part of it with me. And so that's why I'm really focusing on this newsletter, and I'm really hoping that folks will go to notyourinspiration.org and sign up for the newsletter. It is a decent amount of email, send out updates, like I said, two or three times a week, but I only send stuff that I think is is worth, you know, the click. And, you know, it's usually either sharing work that other disabled advocates are doing or just encouraging people to participate in whatever type of activity that I have going on with that project at the time. So like the first thing, and it's the only thing I've done now, but I'm sure I'm going to do some other things. But the first thing that I really started was this petition to Hyundai to stop doing this. And kind of utilize that as a way to get people active and engaged, because it's a very low barrier to entry for people to sign their name to a petition, saying that, hey, this thing is really shitty and you need to stop it. But then from there, making sure that I'm continuing to communicate with people who sign that and saying, let me show you, you know, why that this is just one small drop in the bucket and how, you know, you may be able to help me pour out the bigger bucket that's the bigger problem for us. And that's the systemic change. So I would love, you know, people to link up with me through this project as kind of a vehicle to begin building something long term. And I know that begins with organizing, but eventually, actually literally tangibly building something. I'm a big believer in the approach that BSA, the Black Socialists of America, take, in that we can talk theoretically about socialism or leftist anti-capitalist theories all day. And there's plenty of that. You know, the podcast market is flooded with it. But until we actually start building some stuff, right, and showing people what this looks like, what this theory looks like, I think it's going to be very difficult for the mass groundswell of support that we'll need for real systemic change to happen. But I also feel that if we do start building those kind of things, whatever can be built in our communities, whatever we can find locally to start building with allies, once people see those things, it can be a game changer for a lot of folks, you know. And I say this as someone who came from the right wing of politics. You know, I started out as a Republican political consultant out of college, and you know, I've to end up where I am now. It took a lot of reflection, but the reason that I wasn't the lost cause, and you know, it's easy to write a lot of people off as lost cause, but the reason I wasn't is because I had that perspective as a marginalized person. And I think most people, whether they realize it or not, can find some way that either they or someone that they love is marginalized by society. So bringing us all together and building around that and showing someone an actual physical thing, a tangible thing, and saying, hey, this is the answer to that problem that you know deep down inside, but you don't want to admit because it's just too hard to address. And that's that society is not set up for you and me. And hey, here's the answer. I think that's huge. And
there is this thing going on.
What is called
the news? I'm brought to you live.
Welcome back to The Avalanche. You are just listening to an episode of It's Going Down, titled Finding the Intersections Between Anti-Capitalism and the Fight Against Ableism. To listen to the remainder of this episode, you can find it on itsgoingdown.org. Again, the remainder of the episode is on itsgoingdown.org. That completes this episode of The Avalanche, a special edition of Off the Hour, airing every Wednesday from 5 to 6. To stay up to date with Avalanche news, check out our Twitter, at AvalancheCKUT. Thank yous are due to all those who make educational and inspirational radio here at CKUT possible. If you would like more information on anything you heard tonight, or would like to participate or support news produced by and for the Montreal community, please contact the Avalanche at @avalancheCQT.ca or CQT's Community News Department at 514-448-4041, extension 6788, or news@CQT.ca. Stay tuned for Jose. That's up next.
Cauliflower.
Confusion. Creation.
Pickle. K for
kitten.
Cam.
See, wait. Fianrof. U. Unbearable.
U is for underground.
Oh, yeah.
Umbrella.
T. Trite.
Tremendous.
Torment.
Tire.
C. K.
I can't think of a U one. T.
T.
F is for famous.
Fun. Fumble. M is for Montreal.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
It's time for Audio Smith. It's time for Audio Smith. Smith, Smith, Smith,
Smith, Smith, Smith.
A queer, feminist, trans-positive radio show about fucking in all its forms. Let's not beat around the bush. This show contains explicit sexual content. So turn the volume all the way up.
Oh, that was so hot. I'm gonna pee for you now. Are you ready? Yeah, you wanna watch me pee? Oh yeah, I'm gonna pee, yeah.